an arm in the fucking world, man. You know he armed Iraq. I wondered about that, too. You know, during the Persian Gulf War, those intelligence reports would come out.
Iraq, incredible weapons. Incredible weapons.
How do you know that?
Well...
we looked at the receipt. But as soon as that check clears, we're going in. What time's the bank open? 8? We're going in at 9. We're going in for God and country and democracy, and here's a fetus and he's a Hitler. Whatever you fucking need. Let's go. Get motivated behind this. Let's go.
The law of country.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men, and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Friday, September 30th, 2005. And you guessed it, it's Newsreel. Made it through the week. The WOG Global Sitrep for WOG Core Political Tyranny, Technology, and Trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today. And just by listening to this program, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal currently by going to Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. This is a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Osprey Radio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way you see fit, which please includes, you know, doing whatever you can to distribute the show physically on a disc out into the world. Once you create a disc, a show, one of your favorite shows, like if you got a favorite newsreel show, say, okay, now, and you burn it to disc, and you've got an hour-long show, and it's on disc. Well, if it's a favorite show, burn like 4 or 5 of them to disc, and then that way they exist. They're an existing media. Make a case for it and leave it somewhere. Someone will pick it up, leave it in a place where, you know, people like it, like down at a coffee shop. People go to coffee shops all the time. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to bet that if people locally just took discs of Newsreel, left them at all the local Starbucks, I mean, Newsreel would probably double over triple, quadruple overnight. There'd be so many people you reach in a different demographic because you wouldn't even they wouldn't even have to know you. It could be anyone could pick up the disc. And then they'd be able to see, you know, what's out there and what's, you know, the counterculture is doing and where we're all going and what Rant Media and everything's all about. It's a pretty good idea. It's a pretty good idea. It's kind of guerrilla marketing, I know, but I suppose I'm using, you know, evil techniques to benefit the good, you know. I mean, there's a lot of people, you know. Sim, I didn't even run this idea by Sim. I don't know what he's going to think about it. You know, he might say, good God, Sean, what are you saying on the air? But, you know, that's why it's my show. I can go out and do that. And a lot of my views, and I should state this now, please, a lot of my views are not the views of Rant Media. Oh, boy. Oh, man, have I got an inbox to prove you wrong. No. A lot of my views are just my own. So bear in mind, you know, if you're going to shoot anybody, it's one lone kook over here. Don't take down Rant Media. It's all me, baby. All me. Okay, anyway. Dear Sean, I got some feedback right off the top here. Dear Sean, hi. Just a quickie to say that I've been watching Rant TV for a while and just recently started listening to Rant Radio. I would like to get involved, but somehow, as I do not have a server and I'm unable to donate bandwidth, anything I can do. By the way, I live in England. Well, Mr. England person, I would... Well, first of all, anything you can do, I don't know how old you are, so that's kind of awkward because you don't really want to be encouraging minors to do things that can, you know, get them in trouble and so on and so forth. Plus, that opens me up to a whole lot of persecution if I'm thought of doing that. But I don't see anything wrong with telling you what I just said in the intro of the show. You know, burn a disc, drop it somewhere, give it to your friends. Talk about Newsreel. That's about the best thing any of us can do because... Well, as people come to Newsreel and, you know, listen to me, you know, yell and scream and make a fool of myself, as more people do that, there's kind of a community that is involved with that, with Rant Media. People get involved with Rant Media. People get involved with speaking with each other, and there's always communication and friendships are formed. And that's really what the Rant community is all about. It's about getting everybody on the same page. We're getting bigger every day, and we're just trying to get more people involved so they can see that there is an alternative to the corporations dictating your friends and your social group. That's sort of the idea here. I'm going to go out on a limb, but that's one definition of it here. So I would recommend that, especially in England where, you know, there's a lot of tension right now. But I would recommend that you obey all local and state, you know, provincial, you know, totalitarian, crazy Gestapo laws you got, because wouldn't want you to get in any trouble. Dear Sean, I've been watching Patrolling on Rant TV, and I've been trying to heed your advice about getting off of soda. Very smart. Very, very smart. Pop is bad. And switching to something different, i.e. coffee and tea, for example. Now, coffee is not any great love of the galaxy either, and there's all kinds of problems with being, but drinking coffee. But, you know, worrying about you and only you, yeah, I would definitely recommend coffee off of tea, because, I mean, anybody who knew me back in the service, they knew that I drank, oh, Christ, I must have went through at least 5 cans of Dr. Pepper a day. Like, not even a question. I mean, we're talking hardcore addiction here. And I beat it with coffee. And it was Starbucks coffee. I'll come out and say it. You know, there was a Starbucks by this Geeks R Us computer store I used to work at. And, you know, you'd go by the Starbucks, and I was like, I was a little Starbucks whore, man. I was in there every day. I'm jacking up on the caffeine, you know. Sim was always scolding me and everything. I know, it's terrible. This was back in the days of cult, but hey, you know, you had to run it on something. Anyway, going on here. However, my parents are very afraid of me getting addicted to coffee. Yeah, I mean, there's certain things. I mean, that's probably big, I don't know. And they're your parents, so you should listen to your parents. Yet, they have no trouble with all that soda. Well, yeah, that's probably an education issue. Your parents seem to believe that the soda's okay. It's possible to be addicted. It is possible to be addicted to soda. I've gone through it before in the past. Yes, of course, it's more than possible. It's proven. I guess the reason they're comfortable with the soda is because you can get 3 liters for a buck compared to the Sobe green tea, which comes in a glass bottle about as big as 2 cans stacked on top of each other for $1.50. Or compared to coffee, which costs $3 for pre-brewed or $5 for a big canister of unbrewed stuff. Anyway, I just thought I might have gone into fluff territory of some of this email, but basically what I'm asking is, why are people so comfortable with bone leeches compared to the lesser evil? Well, now, this is very true. Now, you got to bear that's the essence of it right there. If you haven't drank Coke or any, you know, Pepsi, any of these products anywhere in a long time, and you go take a big mouthful of that stuff, especially one that's packaged in an aluminum can, and that was from Nomad Nightfall Gemini, by the way. But when you go take a big belt of this stuff, you're like, oh my God, this tastes like ass. Right? Well, how is it possible then that we're buying it? You know, if the colas, if you don't drink them for like, say, 21 days, okay, you reset your palate, do a body cleanse, all the rest of it, and you get back onto the colas and you take a big mouthful of this shit and it's like, oh my God, this tastes like ass. Well, why did you buy it? Ah, this is the key here. Now we're getting into the realm of mental programming, i.e. advertising and the media. This is what they do. I mean, they sell you a concept of what a rock star lifestyle is, or whatever, you know, something desirable, a desirable way to perceive yourself through media images, right? And nobody's better at this than Coca-Cola. I mean, my God, the Santa Claus, okay, as we have come to understand him in North America, is a Coca-Cola product. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, and then we get into the whole Christmas shenanigans and all the rest of it. Now, like, don't get me wrong. I love giving and receiving presents. One of my great joys in life, one of the only joys I've had when I was a child, was my memories of Christmas. I love Christmas. Great holiday. Don't want to do anything with it. Really into the whole life. I even like keeping Christmas, just to segue off of the Coca-Cola thing here. I'm far more inclined to give Christmas to the Christians and, you know, call it Christmas and do the whole Christian Christmas thing. Yeah, sure, put up the crosses and say grace and do all that. Yeah, have a great time with that. Why not? Immerse yourself in it. Have a good time, you know? And if there was another holiday that came up after that where there was like Allah or something, or I don't know, I think Hanukkah's at the same time or something like that. But if we could somehow get it so that we could do like, keep all the gods. You know, that'd be cool. And then you could go to all these cool parties and give everybody presents and, you know, get ripped up. And you don't really have to worry about it because you don't really believe in it. It's kind of like Easter Bunny and all that sort of stuff. But kind of, you know, kind of keep the Santa Claus feeling in Christmas. You know, I mean, why not? What the hell? There's nothing wrong with it. A lot of people really dig on it. And it's a good peaceful solution for all you hardcore atheists out there that always have a hard time at about this time of year. You know, you're not... You don't really always have to make such a big, huge, screaming statement about stuff. You know, you can just go have fun with it. Fuck it. They can believe what they want. I'm going to believe what I want. You know, that's my whole, that's my approach on the situation anyway. But getting back to Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola has, because they've, you know, in name recognition around the world, it goes Coca-Cola, God, the United States, okay? So they've got this marketing stranglehold on the entire media. And even little stores all over North America, little tiny stores, if they want to make a sign, they can have a Coke sign, so they sell Coca-Cola on these little stores. You see what I mean? I mean, it's brilliant how they've done it. They're amazing, but that's why. I mean, when you look at it, it's everywhere, and it's familiar, and people do not like change. So in answer to your question, the big, you know, switcheroo here, getting right down to the brass tacks, is because of familiarity. Pop is everywhere. And people fear change. So with those two rules, I mean, that's how Coke maintains, and Pepsi and all the Pops maintain their whole stranglehold on society. That's just my own personal opinion, though. On to a sort yourself out. It's an opinion piece. I've got all my highlighting on my, every day I do a show format, and I've got everything highlighted. And occasionally I just kind of, you know, you miss the titles and everything. Here we go. Okay, dear Sean. On my opinion piece here, do you think cults like Scientology, this is the letter I got from Astrofix, do you think that cults like Scientology have any economic value? Well, I haven't thought about this, maybe you have. Astrofix. Okay, well, this is an interesting question. Do they have any economic value? Well, first I suppose we should determine what economic value is. You know, I mean, I'm not really that familiar with economics. I'm horrible with money. I would never claim to be any kind of an economical guru right off the top. But the big question here is, does what these cults teach, what a cult would teach, if it produces money, let's assume they do have economic value, okay? So if something has economic value, does that mean that the cult is worthwhile? Okay, now here's where we get a little bit dodgy here. For example, if I created a cult that its whole purpose was to sell healthy children on the black market, but we produce the children we sell, okay? This is a very dark concept, but like you get a couple, they determine that they're going to produce a child. That child is therefore their property because they made the child themselves. Then they're going to sell the child, and I create this whole belief structure around this, and we sell the children to the black market. Okay, largely females because they'd probably be what would be in demand, and we could start our own, you know, actually genetically created slave company that produces slaves, and the parents know that the children they produce are slaves and will be sold off as such. And you could create like this bizarre rich elitist mindset, because of course people would pay a lot of money for slaves. It's a very, you know, it's been a lucrative trade throughout all of history. So you create this sort of a structure. People go, holy shit, Sean, how did you come up with this stuff? Well, you know, this is how my brain works. All right, but anyway, so if you were to do that, you would have economic value there. Okay, you'd have a lot of economic value. I mean, the people would be making huge bucks, huge cash. But the people are creating slaves, and they're having people born into lives of unbelievable horror. So who gives a fuck, right? I mean, we're making money. Who cares about anything else? Well, yeah, now that's where you need to draw the line. You have to look at, you know, what does this cult teach? You know, let's look at the cults themselves, and what is, and regardless of the money. Well, I mean, with Scientology, what happens is that people become shattered emotionally. They are made, created to be weaker and more dependent. Now, it could be argued that all religions do this, but you will find Christian scholars, you will find Christian doctors, you will find Jewish doctors, you will find Islamic doctors, you'll find a lot of very highly, highly educated people within other religions, okay? Because they're an empowering religion. A lot of religions should be fairly empowering, okay? And when things are like Scientology come along and they have all these other cults, they take away your power. So I would say, if I was to draw a line, I would say that religion, even though the whole thing is not a good idea right off the cuff, let's get that out of the way. Religion sort of empowers the individual and works to make their lives better versus cults, which take power away from the individual and serve to make them weaker. So that would be, your guiding sort of light there on that. Do they have economic value? Sometimes people, they come back from wars and stuff like that, so emotionally shattered, they find Jesus, and they live a very healthy life. A very healthy and a very happy life. And there's nothing wrong with that. Okay? And you don't want to go poking holes and stuff like that, because you haven't got a support net psychologically to support these people who need to have that kind of religion in their lives. And if you don't have a support net there for them, you can't be kicking them out of the boat, because you're killing them. You'll be destroying their whole structure of society. So the problem is then with cults like Scientology and other cults, you can't. They become unable to function as human beings if the cult is removed. And invariably, because the cult makes them weaker and weaker until they're useless, the cult drops them and it utterly destroys lives. So although certain cults and religions, we'll stick with cults here. So although certain cults have amazing economic value, like, my God, Scientology is loaded. The amount of money these guys have, unbelievable. The Raelians, holy shit. Cash like you wouldn't believe. But does that mean that because they have economic value, they have real value? No, they don't. I think they're evil. I think that it's a personal moral code here. I think it causes more suffering, and cash be damned. So, it's not worth it in the long run. So that's just my take on that. Now into the news. Halloween is right around the corner. We got October coming up, my favorite month. Gotta love October. Well, in the Cyberpunk kit, to celebrate this, we have a PKE meter. The Tri-Field has the capability to scan for electrical fields, magnetic fields, electromagnetic, RF, microwaves. According to Adam Norrie from the Minnesota Paranormal Study Group, it's a nice piece of equipment, but it's truly optional for a ghost hunter. So what this thing is a little EMF meter that will go and pick up any electromagnetic frequencies in the area. So if you're going to do any ghost hunting, this is the kit to have. And it's only $180, which is pretty sweet for a lot of really highly sensitive gear. Buddy here goes on to say, the way we use the Tri-Field in our investigation is to find out what electrical fields are present in haunting cases. Sometimes radio waves can play around with our audio equipment and leave our signals on tapes, so we measure that with a baseline reading of how much of that field is present. We do the same thing with two other fields. We walk around a location with the EMF or Tri-Field meters to see if there's any spikes in the area. If there is, we mark it and then go back with the other equipment, like an audio recorder, to take photos of the area. Basically, we just use the meters to find areas that could be considered hot spots, and then those for other evidence, and then use others for other evidence. So that's kind of an interesting piece of gear. I wonder if that's how they're doing ghost hunting these days. They just kind of go in there, do a sweep, and then, if they got anything, they take a bunch of photos and they leave. Well, that to me isn't ghost hunting. Okay, that's ghost harvesting. If you're going to ghost hunt, well, you got to get your gear. I'd have one of these things and everything, you know what I mean? But I'd have like an infrared camera and a regular film camera, maybe a night vision camera. Get all those three set up, and create a hide or something in an area where you're there and stay there the whole night and try to communicate and talk and cook something out and see if there's, and do this for hours and see if you can get something to talk to you. And if you can get that on film, you've just made metaphysics bridge with real technology. That's a pretty heavy stuff. Now, as well, it's great because they're not even trying to hide what these devices are anymore. New network spy cameras. This is great. Worried about what your employees are doing when you're not around? Or not sure what your kids are indulging in when the house is left all to them because of your absence? You psycho control freak? Well, D-Link is providing a solution in the form of a new wireless camera, the latest addition in the surveillance products line. The new D-Link internet camera with 3G capabilities was formally launched this week. It will offer customers the comfort of viewing live video streaming via 3G cell phones. Can you believe that? The modus operandi of the new camera is simple. You can attach it to the home or a small office network by making use of the wireless or wired 802.11g/b connection. So you plug this sucker in, bang, it's up. The live camera will then provide you with a live feed routed through the 3G cellular network by compatible handsets with an attached 3GPP player. The new camera is believed to provide the uttermost convenience to small entrepreneurs, even home users, keeping a real-time tab on activities anywhere within the 3G service area. So it's basically, you know, a plug-and-go spy camera for the office. Now, you're going to be seeing more and more of these things. And I draw your attention back to the camera finder that I ran on the show. It's a daily hack, or not a daily hack, a cyberpunk piece of kit, where, you know, in your workplace, that's not that bad of an idea. You know, if you maybe you should get one of these things because it's small enough. You put it up to your eye. No one would really be sure what you're doing. And you could find out where the cameras are. I mean, from there, I mean, you know, you can make a rational and legal decision about what you want to do about the cameras. But at least then you'd be in the know. And clearly, with this kind of technology hitting the market, I mean, you know, apparently corporations could be eating this stuff up. Now, in global warming news, researchers from NASA... Okay, so NASA, the National Snow and Ice Data Center, and others. So basically the big heavy hitters in North America, using satellite data, had detected a significant loss in Arctic sea ice this year. Danger. On September 21st, 2005, the sea ice extent dropped to 2.5 million square miles, the lowest extent yet recorded in satellite record. Okay, so that's... they don't actually say how long that is, but it'd be interesting to know. Incorporating the 2005 minimum using satellite data going back to 1978. Holy crap. So that's like 27 years or something like that. With a projection for ice growth in the last few days of this September brings the estimated decline in the Arctic sea ice up to 8.5% per decade over the last 27-year satellite record. Scary. Scientists involved in the research are from NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center, Greenbelt MD, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and the National Snow and Ice Data Center in University of Colorado Boulder and the University of Washington Seattle. So basically, everyone is involved here. Satellites have made continual observations of the Arctic sea ice since 1978, recording a general decline throughout that period. Now, when you take on that, you're like, wow, the sea level's going up. But then I got this other story sent to me by Pig Monkey on the Plague Watch front, and this is a little bit disturbing. This is a little bit disturbing. Check this out. As global warming melts the world's ice sheets, as I just, you know, we've already proven that with NASA there, rising sea levels are not the only danger. Viruses hidden for thousands of years may thaw and escape, and we will have no resistance to them. Last week, the latest study to track global warming revealed that Alaska's snowless season is lengthening, as well as the information I just gave you. As the world warms and ice sheets and glaciers begin to melt, most of us worry how the Earth will respond with this kind of impact climate change we have. Will flooding become a regular feature? Or is land going to become parched? Are hurricanes and typhoons going to spring up places that I've never visited before? Is the rising sea level going to swallow some of the world's most fertile farmland, along with millions of homes? All of these are valid concerns, but it turns out the impact of global warming could be worse than we first imagined. Ice sheets are mostly frozen water, but during the freezing process, they can also incorporate organisms such as fungi, bacteria, and viruses. Some scientists believe that climate change could unleash ancient illnesses as ice sheets drip away and bacteria and viruses defrost. Illnesses we thought we had eradicated, like polio, could reappear. While common viruses like human influenza could have a devastating effect if melting glaciers release a bygone strain to which we have no resistance. Now, there's a lot of speculation in this. What is more is new species unknown to science may reemerge. And it's not just humans who are at risk. Animals, plants, marine creatures could also suffer as ancient microbes thaw out. Now, this, to me, first of all, as, you know, me giving to my horror writing aspects, I mean, there's a lot of stuff you could do with this. You could talk about how, you know, microbes are going to thaw out, and we'll have, like, some kind of weird mutation. The bioweapons guys get a hold of it and try to run with it. You could also do the classic, you know, sea monster in the ice melts away, is released into the underground, and you've got, you know, a Godzilla-type story. But other than that, I mean, there's not a lot we can do about this other than try to, you know, keep our immune system strong, which means going out and getting bit by mosquitoes every once in a while. So... but this is something to be aware of. There's a lot of information. There's a book that was out called The Coming Plague, which was kind of an interesting book. And if you... I think it's called The Coming Plagues. It's what I named the title story after. But, I mean, plagues and viruses... I mean, in every war, you don't think about stuff like that. Like, the amount of disease in New Orleans must be just sick right now. And when you consider that you know, you look at, you know, what could happen with food and food supplies, water supplies. It's something to be aware of. So just something to bring your attention there. Now, in FDA news sent in by Astrofix here, Lester M. Crawford, who resigned as commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration last Friday, told Forbes.com he decided to leave the agency because he was tiring after 3 years of the agency. Yeah, I imagine his life is real hectic. He denies that financial conflicts of interest had anything to do with his decision to resign. Oh, financial conflicts, hey? What particular... I wonder what financial conflicts the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration would have. I thought it was time for somebody else to do it, Crawford said. I didn't think it was possible for me to be very effective anymore. Oh, good reasoning. Okay. Crawford's resignation raised eyebrows. Why he had been acting commissioner for some time, he was only confirmed as commissioner in July. He became deputy commissioner in 2002. Crawford says that to his knowledge, he did not own any shares of companies that were regulated by the FDA during his tenure as acting commissioner. He says the only thing that came close was his ownership of some paper companies, which he had been told had been regulated by the agency during his tenure. He promptly sold them. He says, although his wife's family sold their drugstore chain, Walker Drug Company, to a firm that eventually became Amerisource Bergen, a giant drug wholesaler, he says he did not own shares in those companies during his FDA tenure. Crawford also says he had no interest in Embrex during the time he acted as FDA commissioner. He had served as director of the firm, which makes vaccines for birds, and at one point owned as many as 37,000 shares, according to the filings with U.S. Securities and Exchange Commissions. But he says he sold his interest in Embrex before going to work at the FDA. Additionally, he said bird vaccines are regulated by U.S. Department of Agriculture, not the FDA. Oh, I see. Crawford says he plans to make a detailed account of his investments available as soon as his accounts are done with it. I mean, as soon as possible. So, you know, I guess it'll be interesting now that since he's resigning, it'll be neat to see who they bring in as their new pet monkey up there at the FDA. That'd be nice to check out. Now, in Mud Hut news, getting back to the whole religious thing, religious belief can cause damage to a society, contributing towards high murder rates, abortion, sexual promiscuity, and suicide, according to research published today. According to the study, belief in and worship of God are not only unnecessary for a healthy society, but may actually contribute to social problems. Now, that's an interesting idea here. The study counters the view of believers that religion is necessary to provide the moral and ethical foundations for a healthy society. Now, I've heard that before, you know, because you've got to know what's the difference between right and wrong, where's your moral compass. It compares the social performances of relatively secular countries such as Britain with the U.S., where the majority believe in a creator rather than the theory of evolution. Many conservative evangelicals in the U.S. consider Darwinism to be a social evil, believing that it inspires atheism and amorality. Well, you know, I suppose they got a point there. It does kind of inspire you to be an atheist, and it also, you know, does make you go against a lot of church morals, so they're not really wrong with that. Many liberal Christians and believers of other faiths hold that religious beliefs is socially beneficial, believing that it helps lower rates of violent crime, murder, suicide, sexual promiscuity, and abortion. The belief of religion's belief to a society, the benefits of religion's belief to a society have been described as spiritual capital. But the study claims that the devotion of many of the U.S. may actually contribute to its ills. So, now this is an interesting angle to play. I don't know if I'd agree with this, though. I mean, the paper published in the Journal of Religion and Society, a U.S. academic journal, reports, many Americans agree with their church-going nation as an exceptional, God-blessed, shining city on the hill that stands as an impressive example of an increasingly skeptical world. In general, higher rates of belief and worship of a creator correlate with higher rates of homicide, juvenile, and early adult mortality, STD infection rates, teen pregnancy, and abortion in the prosperous democracies. The United States is almost always the most dysfunctional of the developing democracies, sometimes spectacularly so. Gregory Paul, author of the study and a social scientist, used the data from International Social Survey Program, Gallup, and other research bodies to reach his conclusions. Well, this is interesting stuff. So this guy here is a self-admitted, you know, studying social scientist. And he's saying that, you know, religion is really, really bad. You know, it causes all this stuff. That just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me. I mean, I could understand there's a lot of reasons to have religion on a social science level. I mean, it makes people easier to control. You know, there's a lot of perks for a leader to have people, you know. If a leader is thought to be ordained by God and everybody believes in God, then, you know, everybody kind of stays and toes the party line. It's good to be king in that particular case. But, you know, to say that it actually gets in the way, well, you know, you can check it out yourself, follow the links, and see what you think about that. I don't know if I buy into that too much, though. Now, in space news, now this is interesting stuff. Remember before I was saying that if I was George Bush, I'd be heading for space? Well, looks like that's what he's planning on doing. But there's some interesting developments coming out of this. The space shuttle and International Space Station, nearly the whole U.S. manned space program for the last 3 decades, were mistakes. They were a big oops, NASA's chief Michael Griffin said Tuesday. In a meeting with the USA's editorial board, Griffin said NASA lost its way in the 70s when the agency ended the Apollo missions in favor of developing a shuttle and space station which can only orbit the Earth. Okay, it's now commonly accepted that that was not the right path. We're trying to change the path while doing as little damage as we can. Now, why would that be the wrong path? I guess I wouldn't say it's the wrong path, but I would say, because you got to be able to get up to space, you got to get up there. You know, I mean, you got to be able to get up and down fairly inexpensively. Like, maybe they should build a rocket in space using the shuttle. You know, kind of combine the two. The shuttle has cost the lives of 14 astronauts since the first flight began in 1982. Roger Pelker Jr., a space policy expert at the University of Colorado, estimates that NASA has spent about $150 billion in the program since its inception in 1971. That's pretty goddamn good that they only spent $150 billion in, 32, 33, 34 years. The total cost of the space station by the time it's finished, in 2010 or later, may exceed $100 billion. Oh no, the cost of one stealth bomber. Although other nations will bear some of that, only now is the nation's space program getting back on track, Griffin said. Actually, I think a stealth bomber is a lot less than $1 billion now. Well, what's a super carrier worth? I mean, I'd rather trade a super carrier for a space station, you know what I'm saying? Or a moon base. He announced last week that NASA aims to send astronauts back to the moon in 2018 in a spacecraft that would look like the Apollo capsule. The goal of returning Americans to the moon was laid out by President Bush in 2004, before Griffin took top job at NASA. Bush also said the shuttle would be retired in 2010. Griffin has made it clear in previous statements that he regards the shuttle and space station as misguided. He told the Senate earlier this year the shuttle was deeply flawed and the space station was not worth the expense, the risk, and the difficulty of flying humans to space. Now, this is interesting because they're going with a single-shot program. Although, you know, it could be argued that just putting up things into space and not coming back down, that's, you know, that's the wrong direction. I would concur with that. But the problem then becomes that, well, I hate to tell you this, but how are you going to get off the planet? If your rockets, you're building these massive rockets, right, that can barely get to the moon and back again, huge feats to do this, okay, then you're going to really drastically be limited by how far you can go in space versus building something in space using either a beanstalk or a shuttle or something like that so that you could build like a huge starship already off planet so you haven't got to escape the planet's, you know, gravitational field. I don't understand. Like, I'm sure there must be a reason why he's not doing this. If someone could let me know what that is, I don't know. But if you're going to be doing deep space exploration, you're not going to be doing shit with rockets, pal. You got to get yourself something up there that can be refueled. So you haven't always got to fight with the planetary gravitational pull all the time. I mean, it sort of seems like common sense to me. Now, this is an interesting one found by Madar here. A toxic alert regarding Paxil. Now, there's a lot of people out there that take Paxil, and if you're a pregnant woman, for God's sake, stay the hell away from Paxil. The FDA and drug company GlaxoSmithKline are alerting doctors about a new study on major birth defects seen in babies to women born who took the antidepressant Paxil during the first trimester of pregnancy. Healthcare professionals are advising to carefully weigh the potential risks and benefits of using Paxil in women during pregnancy and discuss these findings well as treatment alternatives with their patients, the new FDA says in release. Paxil was linked to twice as many birth defects. Isn't that interesting? So, you know, if you know anyone who's pregnant right now, you might want to ask them and say, hey, are you taking Paxil? Like, actually be, you know, if you're a friend, walk up and say, yo, you wouldn't be taking Paxil, are you? And they'd say, well, no. But if they say, yeah, they go, why? and you say, well, I just, you know, hook them up with the show so they can see what's going on, just on the LiveJournal site there, and they'll be able to follow that through and make an intelligent decision so they don't fuck up their kids without their knowledge. You know, I'm kind of a big fan of, you know, for the kids, you know. Anyway, in thought crime news, now this is interesting stuff from The Decoy, who I don't hear much from, but very, very, very good guy. Now, this particular story is scary as hell, so be advised. Apparently, okay, a futuristic forensic technique that can scan people's brains for clues to crimes will be considered at the next Victorian Liberal State Conference. The controversial technique known as brain fingerprinting, now we talked about this before, claims to pinpoint a criminal's guilty thoughts, has already been used in some U.S. criminal cases. Now, this is according to an Australian online document. I don't know of this being used in U.S. criminal cases, but could somebody find out about that? A suburban Melbourne Liberal branch is to put a motion before next week's state council calling for the introduction of a radical technique if the party wins government in Victoria. Critics of the method have slammed it as Orwellian, saying it threatens freedom of thought, but advocates say it's more effective than DNA testing and can even be used to stop crimes before they occur by identifying potential terrorists. This is, I'm hoping to God that this party is actually, you know, being funny here, but that's totally Minority Report right there. The Keeler branch of the state Liberal Party says the method has been tested by the FBI and is producing results with 100% accuracy. Yeah, I'd like to see your data on that. Brain fingerprinting is a scientific technique that simply detects the presence or absence of information stored in the brain, says the motion revealed in conference papers. This allows scientists to determine if a suspect's innocence or guilt by testing responses of concealed information contained in the thought process. The technique measures the brain's involuntary electrical activity in response to a suspect being shown certain images relating to crime. The technology said is to be more accurate than lie detector tests because it measures the electrical signal that occurs 300 milliseconds after the stimulus, too soon for the suspect to affect the electrical output. Supporters of the technique say it heralds a new era in security and should be used to expose the guilty knowledge carried by would-be terrorists. The October 8th to 9th conference would consider a motion to decree the legislation that common Australian values prevail over so-called religious freedom. Aha! Common Australian values over so-called religious freedom. Now, I'd like to get a little bit more information on this, Desert Runner. If you're down in the region, you can find out what's going on with that, or maybe if you know anybody down there, anyone down under. That's some pretty scary stuff, because that is a threat to the entire free world. If Australia brings this into being and makes that actually happen, you could bank you're going to see echoes of that in apparently in Britain, for sure. And I guess it's being pioneered in America. But I don't even think I've heard Alex Jones talk about this, because this is stuff that I'm sure he's going to be rabid about. As if I'm reading this story, he'll be reading that story. I hear Alex actually sues a lot of people. That's one thing I did hear. The guy apparently is really sue-happy. Anybody who tries to decry what he says, sues the snot out of him. Which, I mean, I suppose if the guy really does believe that he's, you know, fighting the world. But I heard that from someone down in the region the other day. I thought I'd pass that on. So, you know, it's just kind of interesting. I mean, the guy is serious with what he does. He's a hell of a lot more serious than I am, and I hope he doesn't sue me. Because, you know, I hate that stuff. Now, in runaway tech news, and this was sent to me by Valerian, the common electric socket will serve as your home's connection to broadband with a new chip developed by Matsushita's electric industrial company, doing away with Ethernet cables and the hassle of hooking up to a wireless network device. Oh, what a hassle. Plug it in, it's on. Oh, that's a hassle. Products are still being developed, but gadgets embedded with the chip from the Japanese manufacturer of Panasonic products can hook up to a broadband network by plugging into a common electrical outlet, the company official said Thursday. Now, that's because, let me just get through this here. That's because the Osaka-based company has come up with a technology that uses electric wiring in the home to relay not just electricity, but also data. The technology has been around for some time, including in the United States, but Matsushita's system is unique in that it delivers fast-speed broadband information at about 170 megabits per second, which is faster than Ethernet. The advantage is that the lowly electric socket is everywhere. Right now, a broadband outlet isn't usually available in every room, even in homes that have broadband connections. In the future home envisioned by Matsushita, people will be able to download and watch high-definition movies in any room of the house that has an outlet. Isn't that clever? attach a special device made by Mashika into a socket, and all you have to do is plug in your TV or another gadget into a socket for instant connection to broadband, which allows for faster transmission of online information than dial-up telephone connections. Wow, that's great. Except for the fact that now my television is going to be able to monitor what I'm watching, and all your electrical devices in your house have the ability to actually get into that tinfoil hat territory. You know, what if all the devices you buy report their usage? So everything that's electrical that you plug into your house is actually spying on you. That includes your computer, your television, your VCR, especially your DVD player. I mean, if you think about it, holy crap, could this technology be abused? Oh, yeah. And you can bank that the guys like the RIAA and the NPAA are going to be chasing that. Great guns. There'll be a lot of people paying attention to that. So hopefully, all you serious hackers out there will realize, whoa, we got to understand this chip pretty good. And we got to make sure that we got the patches out there to keep us isolated from this and make sure we spread that information around to everybody, because this is some scary, scary information to be sure. Now, like any good transhumanist, I am very interested in life extension. Life extension is some interesting stuff for the Seanster over here. I'd like very much to figure out a way that you can live longer. Very good. Now, the problem is all the technology is being sunk into this, none of us are going to be able to see it because it's all for lost super rich Bilderberg group types. So, you know, how does the guy on the ground, you know, the lowly grunt, get it so that he has access to this life extension technology? And the way you do this is to go through at the back end and watch the scientific reports and stuff like this. Now, this is, I've got this listed as cyberpunk kit as a question mark for body polish. Now, listen up here. The fight against aging has received a scientific boost thanks to an innovative study done in part by the University of Alberta spin-off company, a research that dispels the hard-held belief about the natural ingredient beta-glucan, B-E-T-A-G-L-U-C-A-N, okay? The study, published in the current issue of International Journal of Cosmetic Science, which is scary that it's like a cosmetic science journal, is the first to show that oat, naturally formed oat beta-glucan, can penetrate the skin despite years of doctors and scientists believing the large molecule was too big. The finding is significant not only in the treatment of skin disorders and removing of a few lines and wrinkles, but the promotion of wound healing and the reduction in scarring following a surgical procedures. Now, this is interesting because a University of Alberta spin-off company. Okay, so it's a company that put out this study, and it's a company talking about the advantages of beta-glucan, so we got to bear that in mind, okay? Beta-glucan is a soluble fiber found in the cell walls of oat kernels. It has a long history of safe in use in providing fast, temporary relief of itching pain associated with minor skin irritations. He reported to improve the appearance of smoother skin and has helped in wound healing. But it has long been believed that such a large molecule as beta-glucan was too big to penetrate the skin. In his paper, Redmond and his co-author described using beta-glucan-specific tracking dyes to show the skin penetration did take place. Interesting, the glucan penetrates the same way with water penetrates the brick wall. It does not go through the brick. It goes through the concrete bindings, that the bricks together, says Redmond. As a result, our study, we know that glucan works through intercellular lipid matrix, blah, 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 blah. He goes on to talk about this here. Now, understanding right off the top that this was a spin-off company that came up with this information, but this is the kind of life extension stuff that I'm interested in learning about. You know, is there a lot of can you just buy this shit raw? It's made from oats, right? And what if you were to apply it to your skin every day? You know, would that actually help you, or will it do damage? You know, because you got to bear in mind, the ozone layer is just gone. You know, no one's talking about the ozone. When was the last time you heard anybody talk about the hole in the ozone layer? Nobody talks about that. Well, we got, you know, this great big, you know, fiery ball in the sky here that's sending all kinds of radiation down on it. That's got to be hard on the old skin for prolonged exposure. You know, I mean, that's got to take it out of you. So when you look at that, and you think, well, what can we do to, you know, keep the body so that it's healthy, keep the radiation out of the body? Well, you could load up on the clothing, make sure that you wear sunscreen. But a lot of the sunscreen that's on the market is just scary shit as well, because you're putting, you know, you're training, you know, Robin Peter to pay Paul. You put on a different chemical that does as much, if not more, damage than the sun does, but it doesn't allow the sun damage. So, you know, you try to cover up and, you know, wear hoods and stuff like that. Make sure you don't get too many particulates in your lungs from all the exhaust. So, you know, it's becoming, you notice this now? You notice this? It's like living life healthy is really a choice. It's, you will choose to live healthy, but that choice is dictated by what? That's dictated by money. It's very expensive to live healthy. To buy this kind of cream and this kind of stuff, it would be expensive to buy that and put that on your body every day. It's expensive to have air purifiers. It's expensive to filter your water. Okay, so if you don't have money, you're not going to be able to do any of this stuff. Being a vegan is a first world luxury, to be sure. People in third world nations are just fighting to survive. They haven't got time to worry about what they're eating. Okay, they've got to, you know, get out there and stay alive. They got to have the strength to stay alive. And sometimes there's no food. So when the food does show up and it happens to be meat, you know, my God, meat, you know, massive, you know, protein source. Of course, they're going to be loading up on it. So when you look at, you know, the future of the cosmetics industry, what used to be just for nail polish, I wonder if they're going to be starting to bridge between the health gap. And I'd like to avoid, you know, gimmicks and fads and junk like that. But when you see something like this, where you're thinking, well, maybe this natural, this, you could use it like a body polish. I mean, when you think about it, you've got, you know, you look after your gear and your kit, right? And your body is realistically the only gear you really got. So you should probably try to look after your body. Probably pay attention to, you know, again, being clean, looking after hygiene, making sure you look after yourself so that you can maintain your health. And then it extends on to your food and all the rest of it. But, you know, it's interesting. It'd be interesting to see if anybody out there has any more information on this or if they know if they've had any personal experience. Yeah, I put this stuff on, totally helped me out. It was really, really cool. It'd be interesting if we could find some kind of a body dip that was inexpensive we could use, like WD-40, to keep, you know, the old form kind of supple. Now, on to your daily hack, which is a piece of stenography, which is kind of neat, called hightext.net, thanks again to Datamagot. It lets you convert text to an image, and that means you're going to hide passwords, personal messages, and pieces of code or any kind of private information on forums, blog spots, emails, IRC, MSM, AIM chaps. They created an image, can be linked to, or you can download the image and delete it directly from the server. It's kind of an interesting little utility there. Be sure to check that out as well. There's a bunch of war driving links on my Cyberpunk on the Daily Hacks, so you want to definitely check those out because there's some really cool utilities in there. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back on Monday with Sumerian to provide you with the most entertaining show imaginable and give you all the information you need to stay alive. This would be a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 66 people for the month of September. Thank you so much, everyone who donates, because believe me, well, I need the money. If you would like to help keep this daily new broadcast on the air and buy me some more craft dinner, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donate tab. Upcoming events, got nothing for you. But thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. And if you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Dismantled, called Post Nuclear. I'm going to leave you now with a wicked track by probably one of my favorite bands of all time, Pink Floyd, called The Division Bell. So until tomorrow, that's what's, well, until Monday, actually, that's what Server said. End of line.
Beyond the horizon of the place we lived when we were young, in a world of magnets and miracles, straight constantly and without boundary. The ringing of the division bell had begun. Along the long road and on down the causeway, do they still be there by the cut? There was a ragged band that followed in our footsteps, running before time took our dreams away, leaving the myriad small creatures trying to tie us to the ground, to a life consumed by slow decay. The grass was greener, the light was brighter, of wonder. Look on us. Took a glimpse of how great it was on the other side. Steps taken forwards, but sleepwalking back again. Dragged by the force of some inner tide.
So many times the grass was greener.